Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 242, entitled, How to Build an Incredible Relationship and Have Amazing Sex, I chat with Dr. Steven Snyder. Dr. Steven Snyder is a sex and relationship therapist, podcast host, and the author of the book, Love Worth Making, How to Have Ridiculously Great Sex in a Long-Lasting Relationship. In today's episode, Dr. Steve talks about how to cultivate an incredibly fulfilling relationship with your partner despite living in such a narcissistic and chaotic period of time. He covers intimacy, sex, erectile dysfunction, social media, narcissistic gratification, porn, and the keys to mastering your sex life and becoming more fulfilled in your relationship. If you're wondering how to have an amazing sex life and cultivate a fulfilling relationship with someone you truly love, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. If you are not on the Elite Man newsletter yet, make sure you get on it right now. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and sign yourself up today. Get all of our bonus podcast information, sneak peeks into upcoming shows, behind the scenes content, special offers, and exclusive Elite Man updates found absolutely nowhere else. You are basically getting a sneak peek into all Elite Man content, activity, and updates and news. You will be the first person notified when anything Elite Man related happens. I'm telling you, it's basically like getting a sneak peek into Elite Man headquarters. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter, sign yourself up, and become a true member of the Elite Man community. I look forward to speaking to you soon. elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Dr. Steven Snyder from sexualityresource.com. Dr. Steve, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Well, it's a pleasure, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm
looking
excited.
Forward to this.
I'm excited, man. I know you listened to a couple, or at least one podcast in the past where we had a dating guy on, and your voice is interesting. I like some of the topics you have and some of the ideas you have, but also I think it'll be a little different than what we've normally had on the show, perhaps even contrarian to some of the views that we've had. And I'm interested to go down some of those avenues and kind of pick your brain and see where you come from. But for those who may not have heard of you in the past, what do you do exactly, Dr. Steve, right now? And what is it kind of, what is Sexuality Resource really about?
Sure. I'm a doctor by training, and actually a psychiatrist by training, but I don't really do much psychiatry anymore. Most of my practice is helping men and women and couples with sexual problems, so sex and relationship therapist. And I'm also a blogger at various places, and have a podcast called Relationship Doctor on the QDT Network, and I have a book out called Love Worth Making, How to Have Ridiculously Great Sex in a Long-Lasting Relationship, and it's all about sexual emotions, which hopefully we'll talk about today.
Yeah, cool. How did you get into this kind of work? Were you always interested in sex and just learning more about it, or was it?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, I was pre-med. You know, the pre-meds don't get as much sex as everybody else because, you know, they're always in the library. So I had a little bit of catching up to do, but it did my best. And I had some experiences early in life where I had a few sexual mishaps, as most men do from time to time. And what really struck me was how absolutely miserable I ended up after they happened. And I really couldn't believe how depressing it was. And I thought to myself, this is powerful stuff. I got to help guys with this kind of stuff. So I became a psychiatrist, didn't really like that very much. Became a therapist. That was all right. Sex therapist. Oh yeah, that was great. I could do that all day. And so I just have a soft spot in my heart for guys who are depressed over these kind of things. And that's what I basically do all day long.
When you say some of the things like the mishaps during sex, what are some of the things you're referring to? Maybe not specifically, but types of things. And then how did that make you feel after you said it was like, you know, horrifying in some regards?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a situation. I won't go into the absolutely nitty gritty, but there was a situation where there was somebody that I had desired for a long, long time. Actually, that this ended up in my book in chapter 3. Somebody I had desired for a long, long time and who unexpectedly was interested. I was a single guy at the time, and I couldn't believe my good fortune. Unfortunately, there was part of my anatomy that usually responds in a certain way, and it just wasn't responding. And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe this. This was ridiculous. And so I did all the wrong things, which we can talk about, that everybody does. And they didn't work because they never do. And I woke up the next morning and I was as depressed as I'd ever been in my life. It was horrible. Yeah. It was actually horrible. I was in medical school at the time. I almost dropped out of medical school. I couldn't study. I couldn't do anything. I thought my life was over. You know, I thought to myself, wait a minute, what's going on here? It was crazy. You know, women have no idea what this is like for guys.
Oh, it's
you know, I tell women there's no way you can even identify what this feels like. I mean, imagine you're in bed with your boyfriend and like all your hair falls out. That's about what it feels like.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mortifying.
So finally what I did, a woman was a little, you know, kind of punching above my weight in a way. And she had a previous boyfriend who was very, very distinguished and who I envied a lot. And finally, after about 3 weeks, I asked her the inevitable question, which I'd been waiting to ask her, is why do you want me when you could have him?
Ah.
And she gave me some very good answers. And you know what? It convinced the physical part of me that everything was okay and everything worked. It was amazing.
So actually,
it was astonishing.
It ended up being a good story, a happy ending.
Yeah. And what I learned from this, which I put in my book very early in the book because I think it's an important lesson, is that your body is the most honest part of you, especially that part of your body. And it expresses the emotions that you're really feeling. But its vocabulary is very limited. Its vocabulary is limited to yes and no. I mean, either it says yes or it says no. And by and large, this is really important, it says yes when it feels happy, and it feels no when it doesn't feel happy. So it's going to tell you whether you're happy or not. And until I got that information as to why this person was interested in me, I wasn't happy. I mean, I was excited. I was thrilled. But I wasn't really happy. And, you know, that part of your body has a mentality of about a 2-year-old. It knows whether it's happy or not. You know, you say, aren't you happy to see your Aunt Agnes? He goes, no, I'm not a hater, you know. So people are always trying to convince that part of their body to say yes when it wants to say no. Sometimes you got to say, well, you know, saying no. I don't know why it's saying no, but it must know what it's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know much about this. I'm sure you know infinitely more about this specifically, but I've always thought of it more as a psychological thing as opposed to an actual physiological thing. And I think so many people, especially like pharmaceutical companies, will push the physiological component to this, where it's actually like, you know, once you feel a certain way with your emotions and feelings, that problem will go away.
Okay, so this is really important because I may be a little contrarian here. It turns out that you don't have to have a physical problem to respond to those pills. I don't know if you knew this.
No, well, you know,
they work.
Placebo
for the psychological
effect works too.
It's not placebo effect. So here's the way it works. Every guy is rigged up for his sexual body to say no under certain conditions and to say yes under certain conditions. To say no when it's unhappy and to say yes when it's happy. And this probably dates to 100,000 years ago when we were roaming around the plains of Africa. Yes, happy, that meant there are no lions around. And no, unhappy, that meant there are lions around. So if you're humping, you know, you're the first guy who's going to be eaten. So we're built to lose that capacity in situations of distress. So most guys, it's kind of a balance. you know, first time with somebody, you're excited, so it's going to say yes. But at the same time, you're a little nervous, especially if it seems like this is somebody who's been with some very impressive dudes, and you're a little worried you're not going to measure up. It's going to get unhappy, and it's going to tend to say no. So it's shifting back and forth sometimes on a first date, especially if you're a little shy. And the medicines, what they do is they amplify the positive signals. So it's like it's scales. You're putting a finger on the scale, and you can tip the balance in a positive direction with some of these medicines. And so a lot of guys who have some shyness we prescribe these medications, and they'll take them like training wheels until they've been with the woman, you know, a week or two, and then they take them off, and they're fine.
That's actually really interesting. I never knew that
side. Yeah, a lot of guys don't know that.
But it makes a lot of sense, too. It actually
Absolutely.
Does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I do this all the time. I say to guys, you know, we could have sex therapy for your issue with your body, and that might take a couple of months, or I can give you the medicines plus some counseling, and you could be better in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So it's the 21st century version.
That said, though, too, I do believe what you're saying is 100% accurate. I also believe, though, that you don't even need the drugs if you can just tap into the other side. Like, when you can change your feelings and emotions, you can actually change your physiology as well by having a different state. Like, your different hormones will be released and different chemicals throughout the body will be released, and you'll actually set up into that optimal state where, you know, you don't. They didn't have these chemicals. They didn't have these pharmaceuticals hundreds of years ago,
right.
Thousands of years ago. They just made it work. But,
yeah.
You know, on the other hand, like you said, you can actually kind of open this and take it as like a door to open up into that way. And, you know, training wheels as well for a few weeks or whatever time, it you know, if it works, it works. I don't.
Yeah. I mean, I don't throw these medicines at guys because there is a downside. The downside is that you start to feel psychologically naked without the medicine.
Yeah.
And there was a joke in Chicago. There was a place where all the bars were. It was called the Viagra Triangle, and the legend was that it was where medically enhanced men went to meet surgically enhanced women. So everybody's enhancing in some way, which is ridiculous, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So you said that you tried a bunch of things that most guys will try too, and it never worked. Or
I'm glad you picked up on that.
Yeah.
Okay, the classic things that guys do, if it's not really working 100%, is they start to amp up the friction. Because, you know, it's been said in sex therapy, there's friction plus fantasy, or as is jokingly sometimes said, friction plus fiction. And fantasy, we'll just say, is all the psychological turn-ons. The fact that you're mentally turned on and she looks good and so forth. Dimension is all the actual physical stimulation. And usually for a young, healthy guy, you don't need any physical stimulation in order to get your body to say yes. So, you know, during foreplay, there's usually not much direct physical stimulation. And the body just says yes because it's turned on and it's happy. But when the body sometimes starts to say no, the guy says, okay, well, I better just, you know, stroke it or something, or get my partner to stroke it. And that never works, because the problem is that – can I use the word penis on this show?
Oh, yeah. You can swear and say whatever you want.
Okay, good. You see, I'm worried sometimes people have advertisers and stuff, but the penis thinks very differently than you and I do. You and I might think of it as pleasure if it's getting friction, but the penis experiences as a demand. All right, you better get hard now. Better get hard now. Are you going to get hard now? When are you going to get hard? Mm. And the penis is like a two-year-old. It goes, hell, I don't want to play. I quit. So friction techniques never work, okay, because the penis experiences them as the demand and it just quits. The other thing that guys do, which never works, is they get a little bit. They get, okay, it's basically hard enough, and then they rush to put it in.
Yep.
That never works. It's a sure way to lose an erection, because penises don't like to be rushed because they're 2 years old. Come on, get your snowshoes on. So we're going out. The penis, 2 year old doesn't care. You know, he's watching TV. You know, they don't want to be rushed. They don't understand that. They have no sense of time. So you can't amp up the friction and you can't rush. The other thing which works against a lot of guys, and I see this a lot, is they get real compulsive about it. It doesn't work. And I'm sorry to start this on a negative. Hopefully we'll talk about some positive stuff later in the but it doesn't work. And the guy goes home and he starts just like self-stimulating feverishly to prove to himself that it still works. There's only one problem with that. It's not erotic. it doesn't make the penis happy. And what can happen is you can actually get it not working after that because you're doing it under conditions that don't work because they're actually muscles in the penis and they relax to let blood in. But they're not muscles that you can control, unfortunately, because they're muscles of your internal body. They're like the muscles in your heart or your digestive tract. They're very much like the muscles in your eye. You know, lights off, eye dilates. Lights on, eye constricts. Lights off, dilates again. You can't command that to happen, but it just responds immediately to conditions. Light on, light off. Those are the conditions. Every muscle in the middle of your body on the inside is like that. It just responds to conditions. So the condition for the penis is happy or not happy. Make it happy, it's going to get hard. Not happy, it's going to go soft. And so you can't control it. All you can do is create the right conditions, which I think is what you were talking about.
Yeah. So what do you do then if you're a guy and, you know, you get trapped in a situation like this and you don't have the bottle of Viagra on the counter to pop?
Okay. So the first thing is you got to understand what women are all about. Most guys think, oh, man, woman is going to be devastated because she was really looking forward to like a porn star performance from me. And now she's going to get nothing. She's going to go home and she's going to be so frustrated and upset. And God forbid she's going to tell all her friends and, you know, I'm going to be ruined. That's not usually what women are looking for, or I would say 9 out of 10 women are not looking for that. Basically, they're looking to be validated as sexual creatures. A lot of a woman's arousal and feeling of sexual satisfaction comes from a feeling about herself. When they get dressed, when they, you know, make up and their hair and they spend hours and hours doing this, they're not necessarily doing it for you. They're doing it because it makes them feel sexy. So a woman needs to feel desired. So the key thing is you say the following. You say, I just want you to know I'm incredibly attracted to you. You drive me absolutely crazy. I find you completely irresistible. So you say that, and then she's good. And then you say, you know, I think I might just need to get to know you a little bit better for this to work because I'm feeling kind of shy. Maybe I'm feeling kind of shy because I'm so attracted to you. And maybe often that's true. Often a guy will lose it in the presence of somebody that they find very attractive, and they're worried whether this person is really, you know, attainable or achievable or who she slept with last. So you say that, and the woman has some reassurance that you're really attracted to her. And very often a woman will say, that's okay. You know, most women will give you a pass the first time.
Yeah. So you get the pass the first time. What do you do the second time?
Well, I've got a section in my book in chapter 3 called The Other Side of Saturday Night. I get a call on Sunday morning. It's usually because something went wrong on Saturday night. and so what you do is you got to figure it out, what made you unhappy and what you can do about that. It's often a good idea also to take the medication because the next date you're going to be unhappy. And the reason you're going to be unhappy is because of what happened on date number one. And that can kind of mess you up. It'd be like if you went to the movie theater and the projector didn't work. You're not going to want to go to that movie theater anymore. Unless somebody says, look, we really got to fix for the projector. Then you go, oh, okay, then I can enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
So, You get a sense of it. If it really feels like it's being a serious relationship, it's going to be a serious relationship, you can really say, you know, I think we should just, you know, just enjoy being together. I find you really exciting to be with. And I just for some reason, I think I just need to get to know you a little bit better before this is going to happen all the way. And very often a woman will say, yeah, that's fine. And what she heard and all that was get to know you better. And she's like, wow, he wants to get to know me. That's fabulous. And other women, they just kind of wanted to get it on. And for that kind of woman, usually you need a pill.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
just to put a finger on the scale.
Yeah, no, I never thought of it that way, to be honest. And I guess it works, though. I mean, if you're looking for that type of person, if you're looking for a long-term relationship,
you're fine. Yeah. Most women who are interested in a long-term relationship, they say, "Yeah, fine, take a couple of weeks, it's fine. We got all the rest of our lives. It's terrific, as long as he's attracted to me." Which is why you have to say that first. But a woman who's just looking for a hookup should go, "Yeah, whatever. You know, let's just take the pill." Mm. So, it's a thing. There was a big hue and cry when Viagra first came out in 1998, and the Student Health Service somewhere in California at some college made a query on the email listserv for sex therapists wanting guidance for how to prescribe this medicine. And sex therapists all over the country were up in arms. They said, what do you mean prescribe this medicine? This is, how can you do that? You're just getting guys hooked on these drugs. And I wrote in and I said, wait a minute. Have you guys ever been a guy in college? This is a closed community. This is a high-risk situation. I went to my 40th reunion, college reunion. I'm dating myself the other day. And there were two guys from my class that all I could remember about them is that they had ED. And I hadn't slept with them. You know, somebody had talked. This is serious. This is a closed community. It's a very serious situation.
Yeah, that sucks. You don't want to be the guy with ED back in college and then, you know, 4 years later, you're still trying to get over that.
Exactly.
So we're living in a digital age, a technological age right now. You see so much just stimuli from, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever. How is all this stuff in your experience, in your practice, how is this affecting relationships in the 21st century?
Okay. Well, let's talk about in general, and then if it's okay, well, let's talk about porn.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So let's just talk about it in general. Obviously, we're all spending 3 or 4 hours a day on our smartphones. That's going to take up time. There used to be such a thing as leisure time. You know, there were organizations, I don't know if I'm dating myself, you know, you go to any small town and there was a Rotary Club and a Lions Club and all sorts of things and Kiwanis Club. And yet guys would go after work. They got off work, I don't know, 5, and they'd have dinner and then they go and hang out with their buddies and play some pool. And this thing exists. It was called leisure time. It doesn't really exist so much anymore. Most people are working a lot harder and they're on their emails and on their social media. So that's one factor. The other factor is more psychological, which is narcissism, which is this feeling of being special and important. It used to be that the only way most of us had of feeling special and important was in our intimate relationships, family relationships, particularly romantic and sexual relationships, because there's something about just two people in bed. You know, there's two's company, three's a crowd usually, and unless you're into that stuff. But to two people in bed, and it's just this kind of two people are the universe, and you see yourself reflected in each other's eyes, and there's this tremendous feeling of validation and importance. You really feel like the most important person in the world, and that person feels like the most important person in the world to you. That's very narcissistically gratifying in a good way. One might say sex and romance are narcissistic. They're supposed to be narcissistic. In the old days, the main way to get in trouble was like if you were a celebrity and you were getting all those narcissistic supplies from your public, from your fans. So lots and lots of people thought you were special, so you didn't have to get it from your intimate partners. And you see what that did to Hollywood relationships. They all fell apart because they didn't really need the narcissistic supplies from each other. To some extent in the 21st century, we're all like that. We're all getting all these narcissistic supplies through technology, starting with our phones. You know, our smartphone is happy to see us. It lights up. It does whatever it wants. It exists to do our bidding, as opposed to our partners, which do not exist to do our bidding. And it connects you to social media, to various people who you put something up and they like it and they love it and they follow it and they tweet it and so forth. And everybody's going for that. Everybody's going to make an impression on social media. A lot of people go on their honeymoons and they're just constantly taking pictures so they can post on Instagram and Facebook. So everybody's in show business now. Everybody's famous. And so everybody's looking for more likes and follows, and they forget that the main channel for that healthy narcissistic gratification of feeling special and unique and important should come from your partner. Couple gets up in the morning and they don't reach for each other. They reach for their phones. So that's a thing. So what's essential to do is to realize that there's one thing that your partner, that your phone and your social media public can't do, that your partner can do, which is they can actually enjoy you, you know, actually you. So you want to give that experience of having your partner enjoy you, letting them enjoy you, and of having you enjoy them. That's really the ticket. We really, really do need to be enjoyed. And, you know, your social media following and your phone will never really ignore you like a partner will. They will never really enjoy you like a partner will. They'll ignore you plenty, but they'll never enjoy you like a partner will. I'm giving you a sermon. Does that make sense,
yeah,
though?
Yeah, no, it totally does. It's almost like, and we'll dive into this in a moment, too, but it's kind of similar to the comparison of porn versus real sex. Like, you get this stimulus from, and you know, this excitement from doing this one thing, but it's like an artificial thing, whereas the in-person thing is the real thing, and that's what actually really fulfills you and makes you happy. But it's crazy, man. We are living in, like, a ridiculously strange period in time where it's like we're on the cusp of, like, becoming totally digitalized or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And, man, we're in, like, a weird kind of space right now where we're still living in the past of, like, just being a human, which is great and I think more healthy, but also we're kind of, like, becoming more robotic or reliant on technology. And it's this weird place that we're in right now. And I think the more we dive into that and kind of lose our grounding of who we actually are, the more dangerous it's going to be. And not in the sense of, like, you know, you're going to die, but in the sense of just losing fulfillment and happiness.
Yeah, I see it with my teenage kids. I mean, you know, we live on the 26th floor. We're in Manhattan. And before they get down the elevator from the 26th to the first floor, they've shot two pictures of themselves and have sent them to their friends.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. So, I mean, the other thing that technology does is that it fills your life with all sorts of tasks where you're getting some kind of pleasure from doing these tasks. You know, you're in a game, you're getting to the next level. If you're on social media, you're getting a certain number of things that you achieve. And for me, I get to my work and I have my email and I have 200 emails and I want to get it down to 100, you know, by the end of the day. And that's really hard. So I'm constantly involving doing these little tasks. And doing tasks is really the opposite of the state of mind you want to be for sex or romance, because it's been said that the human mind only has two modes. One is action, in which thinking is actually included in action, and the other is awareness. And sex really has to take place in an atmosphere of awareness where you're just kind of like saying, okay, here I am. I'm just in the moment. And sexual arousal kind of gets you in the moment, which is really nice if you're turned on, because it gets you into this moment where you're not thinking about the past or the present and you're not really judging anything. You're just experiencing it purely. Most people love that experience. These days in the 21st century, that's called the mindfulness experience. So that's why mindfulness is such a big thing. But most of us are instead in this mode of just doing tasks all day long. And so it's like we're in the middle of this big science, this big, big psychology experiment, and nobody knows how it's going to turn out.
If you want to get more content, more information, and extra bonuses I don't post anywhere else, make sure you follow me on Instagram right now. It's at Justin Stenstrom. That's JustinStenstrom. I'm posting pretty much every day throughout the week, most days out of the week for sure, but almost every day. And it's all kinds of information regarding health, wealth, business, life, dating, relationships, confidence, and so much more. I'm telling you, you're going to love seeing some of the stories I post about and the feed posts I post all the time. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty fun. I'm loving Instagram right now, so make sure you follow me, Instagram.com/Justin Stenstrom, or just jump on your phone right now, pull up the Instagram app, and it's at Justin Stenstrom.
So what are some of your pieces of advice for actually saving a relationship or making that relationship healthier despite all of these bombardments from technology and you know, smartphones?
Well, I think the first is to think about what it is that the phone is doing, which is it's giving you all sorts of narcissistic rewards. And when you turn off your phone, which obviously you got to, you say, okay, let me just retune and see if I can enjoy some of those narcissistic rewards that my parents or grandparents might have enjoyed just seeing myself reflected in another person's eyes. I like eye gazing a lot. I like just lying in bed and just breathing and feeling the temperature of the room and feeling your body in the bed. Anything where you can get back in touch with your senses, because mostly in the 21st century, we're kind of out of touch with our senses because we're, you know, so busy living in our fingers with our phones.
Yeah. So is this a constant thing that you're doing all the time? Like, do you have a discussion? Are you married, by the way?
Yeah, 28 years.
Okay. So do you
have... Amazing.
That is, yeah, awesome, man. That in this day and age, man.
Yeah.
It's kind of tough to do.
It's just luck. Yeah, yeah. But we can talk about that, how to choose a spouse. That's a great topic.
Yeah, absolutely. But do you have a conversation with your spouse, with your wife, about these types of things? Do you kind of lay down like groundwork or foundations for when to use technology, when to, you know, put the smartphone down, when to actually
it's an unfortunate or fortunate byproduct of being married to a sex and relationship therapist is that your spouse tries all this stuff out on you before they put it out to the public. So there is a technique which I recommend to everybody, which is in chapter 6 of my book, which incidentally is called Two Roads to Orgasm. And the technique is called the two-step, and it doesn't require dance moves or wearing clogs or anything. It's step two is to do something erotic, usually sex. And step one is just to take a couple of minutes just to kind of let your mind go and just to breathe, feel where your body is, see how you feel, feel the temperature of the room, and just kind of be in your body. And you do that for about 4 or 5 minutes, and then you're much more ready to have good sex. It's a mindful practice, and it makes sex better just the way mindfulness makes everything better. If you do that 5-minute practice and then go to the refrigerator, food tastes better. It just gets you more into the mode of being in your body.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's the most important practice, what I call the two-step.
You're doing that individually, eh?
Yeah, what I tell couples is instead of taking off your clothes and going to bed to have sex, take off your clothes and go to bed to two-step. So first step of two-stepping is doing nothing at all. Just do nothing at all for 5 minutes. That's nice. It wouldn't make a great porn scene, but it's really good. Because, you know, porn is all about camera angles, you know. So, you know, it's the visuals wouldn't be so great, but it's good.
Yeah. That'd probably be a good setup before the porn actually started, before they started filming, you know, you do something like that and then
– Exactly.
The sex
exactly.
Is even better.
Exactly, but instead they probably just take pills.
Yeah. So aside from that, do you do other things like throughout the week? Like say, I know when I go on like dates with women, I never go on my phone, like unless it's an emergency or something, or, like someone's calling me a few times, I know something's up. Like I'll just put the phone aside. I won't even go on it like throughout
the duration. Yeah, put it on airplane mode or something like that. Like, but you're a pro though, yeah.
I try to be, you know, pretty good at this stuff. But like I notice when I go out as well, like I'm looking around at other couples and like you said before, like most of them are just looking down at their phones. No one, they're not even like talking to each other anymore. They're just kind of, you know, checking their email. It's very strange, man.
That's where they're getting their narcissistic gratification.
Yeah.
And it's very, it's a thing. It's a thing. So any intervention you do in the 21st century, my rule of thumb is any intervention you do can take no longer than 2 minutes. Otherwise, people aren't going to do it. So the two-step, just 2 minutes in bed just to do nothing, just to tune up. Makes everything much, much better. And during the week, as you say, when you may not have time to be with your partner and go through the whole Masters and Johnson sex response cycle through arousal and orgasm and everything, all you have to do is what I call the simmer, which takes 1 minute and which most women say is the best. What you do is you pretend that you're teenagers – and you have 1 minute in between classes, and you meet at one of your locker, and you hold each other, you inhale the scent of each other's hair, you breathe together, feel each other, feel excited, kiss deeply, and then the bell rings, and you go to your respective classes feeling just a little buzzed. And any couple should do that every day, every time they can, because it kind of improves the sexual climate in the relationship. Unfortunately, a lot of people think of being sexually aroused like it's some kind of affliction, you know, that when you're sexually aroused, oh my God, that person's aroused, I got to relieve it. A lot of women think that if a guy gets hard, it's an emergency. They've got to get him unhard, you know, by giving him an orgasm, which is ridiculous. We like to be hard. So a lot of women, you have to tell them that. They go, oh yeah, okay, I guess. But they worry about that. So a lot of women, you know, they don't want to wear something sexy to bed because they're worried their boyfriend or husband is going to get hard. And you say, no, it's okay. It's okay. I like this. So the whole idea behind simmering is you can get excited for just a minute. And then it'll eventually fade away and it's good. But it just kind of – it's like simmering a pot of liquid. It just kind of just got it a little warm and that's good. That way when you have sex, you're not starting off cold. So the trick is to enjoy feelings of arousal all the time, even if you're not going to have sex. So you're out at dinner with somebody that you know and that you've been with before, and you just kind of simmer them a little bit. You know, you take off your shoe and you just run it along their ankle and maybe take their hand and stroke their finger or something like that in just a moment. And they can feel it if you're in the moment. There are two ways to touch a partner. The one is because you think it's the move that the partner wants, which unfortunately is what a lot of the men's advice stuff say. All right, you got to touch her this way, then you got to touch her that way. This is what they like and so forth. And unfortunately, it leaves women cold because it feels like a manipulation. It feels like you're just trying to achieve a goal and there's no heart in it. The good way to touch a woman is to touch her for your own pleasure. But it's a mindful pleasure. So you're really there. You're really present. And she knows that her body and her have your full attention. And that's tremendously gratifying for most women. Most they live for that.
Yeah. So you're saying they can easily pick up on when a guy's basically just trying to like pull a move off as opposed to...
Exactly. Exactly. They saw something on YouTube and they go, oh, I got to try this. Yeah. And they go, oh, come on. Just stop it with the technique. You know, I just want to know you're really there. I really want to know you really want me. I always say that, you know, I don't know how many of your listeners read romance novels, but romance novels are amazing. You know, that they're women's pornography. It's the most popular form of literature in the world. You know that?
Oh.
More romance novels get published than anything else. And, they're the so-called bodice rippers. And, you know, in reality, no woman who's really invested some money in her clothes wants to have her clothes ripped off. But the fantasy of it is pretty alluring. And in the romance novel, no hero ever rips off the heroine's clothes and then says, okay, now tell me how you like to be touched. No, he just consumes her because she's so delicious. And that's really what you want. You know, you really just want to experience your partner as being delicious and express how delicious you find them. Because they love to feel delicious. That makes them feel terrific about themselves.
Yeah. And another good point, too, I think along those lines is that those romance novels are pretty thick for a reason. Like, it's not just the guy runs in and, you know, just has sex with the woman and that's it. And it's like,
no,
quick
no.
And fast. It's drawn out. There's a lot of foreplay. There's, you know, a lot
there's
of suspense.
There's a lot of plot. I don't know. The book Twilight, am I dating myself? It came out about 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's about a woman who's dating a vampire. Mm. And because she's dating a vampire, they can't have sex because they're worried he'd lose control and start sucking her blood. And so it's four volumes. And so it's just 1,000 pages of foreplay before they finally get it on in book four. And it's great because it's really arousing. And women all over the world were reading this. And they actually made a version of Twilight in which the woman was not dating a vampire, but she was dating somebody who was very, very psychologically disturbed, and he was a sexual sadist, and they called it 50 Shades of Grey, and it was based on Twilight, and that one got even more action.
Yep.
So the idea of there being some kind of obstacle or difficulty or plot, that can be very, very big. Now, obviously, women can get turned on from straight-ahead porn the same way as men can, but there tends to be a little more context required. You know, it's one of the things that men and women don't really understand about each other. Women like to be able to anticipate, to think about it, to kind of wonder about it, look forward to it, and they like the setting and they like everything to look nice and everything, and the details have been taken care of. In 50 Shades of Grey, Christian Grey, he's got this great smelling body wash and the music is nice and everything is just really nice. And most guys don't really care about that at all. You know, context doesn't really matter. It's just, you know, a woman who looks good takes off her shirt and he's there. So that is a difference.
What are some of the biggest problems that you see when you counsel some different relationships? What are some of the things that stick out, especially, you know, like we mentioned before, in this day and age, what are some of like the newer kind of problems?
Well, one of the new problems is men actually going missing in bed. You know, it was legendary in the 20th century that men tended in the 20th century to have higher sex needs than women. And so the whole thing was women who were not able to respond or didn't have desire. And that still happens a lot. But the big sex problem in the 21st century is the guy who doesn't have desire, the guy who doesn't respond. And this doesn't often happen initially, but it happens after a while in a lot of relationships. And my office is full of women who are very, very upset because their male partner has withdrawn from them in bed and never initiates sex anymore. And the guy sometimes says, well, you know, I want to initiate sometimes. And usually the woman has initiated a couple of times, but they don't really like to because it doesn't make them feel desirable. And you remember, as we said earlier, for most women, being desired is everything. So they can initiate once in a while for fun, but by and large, it's usually the man's serve. And if the man is not initiating, that's a severe problem. And I think few men really understand what it feels like to be a woman and not to feel desired by your partner. For most women, that's like not having any oxygen. They kind of need that. It's like they need it as a fundamental thing. It's validating for them, validates their own femininity. So what is it that makes guys not initiate? Huge question, and there's lots and lots of different answers, lots of possibilities, you know, everything from depression to they're really not attracted to her to testosterone deficiency to all sorts of things. But the big one is that he feels like he's disappointing her. Men hate to disappoint women, and men, when they see a woman disappointed, they usually run the other way. That's one of the reasons that men ghost women. Because they may have lost interest and they don't want her to know that they lost interest because they're afraid she's going to be disappointed. So they just go away. So she'll never have to know that he's lost interest in them. So in a relationship, often a man will see a woman unhappy for some reason and he finds it very, very stressful. And so he'll withdraw. And then that really makes her happy because he's withdrawn from her. She feels abandoned. So she gets really upset and he doesn't know what to do about the fact that she's upset. So he just withdraws further. And eventually he can withdraw and withdraw and withdraw simply because he doesn't know how to make her happy. And he feels that it's impossible, that nothing he can do can make her happy. Very often when you talk to these guys who have withdrawn sexually, they say, I think it's hopeless. I think nothing I can do can make her happy. She's just never satisfied with me. She's never happy with me. And you really have to address that right away as the issue.
Yeah, that's a tough spot to be in for a guy when you don't think anything that you do is actually pleasing the woman, especially when it comes to sex. So,
absolutely.
I mean, what's your advice for that when it's gotten to that type of point? Is there any way to like return to like to a good place?
Well, there actually is, which is to get back to good sex. Because, you know, a classic situation, which I talk about in the book in chapter 4, is that guy comes to see me and he says, nothing I do turns her on. Nothing I do makes her happy. She's always saying, no, slower, faster, not like this, not like that. I told you not to do that. And he says, eventually I just give up. I think she's just very picky in bed. And I say, let me talk to her. She comes in and I say, he says, you're kind of picky in bed. She goes, you're kidding. I'm not picky at all. It's just that he's always just like doing all this stuff trying to figure out what's going to turn me on. I wish he would just show me some real passion. See, men kind of forget to be a little selfish in bed. Used to be 100 years ago, guys were amazingly selfish in bed. They had no idea what a female orgasm was or where a clitoris was. But these days, guys studied up on this stuff because they want to be good. You know, as you say, they want to bring their best game to the thing. And so they're trying to do it right and they're trying to get the technique and make her happy and give her an orgasm. But there's no passion in it. Because it's a technical exercise. It's like they're doing a video game. Yeah. And so I tell guys, no, when you touch her body, don't touch her body for her pleasure. Touch her body for your pleasure. She has to know that her body is giving you pleasure and that you're there and that you're present and that you're turned on. And tell her how much her body is giving you pleasure. And that's the ticket. That's called passion. Passion is selfish. But a lot of guys these days forget about that, especially if they see that she's unhappy. They get panicky. They think, okay, what do I do? What do I do? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do that? And you say, no, quiet it down. Quiet it down. Take a deep breath, okay? You say to your partner, turn on your stomach. She says, how come? You go, I really just want to enjoy your body for my own pleasure. I think I forgot to do that. She says, okay. And you start at her head and you go all the way down to her toes and you just enjoy her body, you know, with your hands and your lips and your nose, and you just inhale her scent and you're just in the moment. And there's a quality when somebody's in the moment with you that your partner feels. And she goes, wow, yeah, that really felt different. And you go, turn over now. Now she's on her back and now you enjoy her body that way. And she says, well, what do you want to do now? She goes, and you go, well, you know, I'm feeling nicely excited right now. I'm okay. If you're up for doing more, I'd love to do more, but it's okay. Whatever you feel like. And so it's a good thing.
Yeah. No, that all this makes a ton of sense. What do you do though when you see people who come to you and say things like have kind of gotten stale? Is that a problem that you've witnessed? And if so, like, you know, say getting boring or like people are, you know, kind of losing interest just because it's always the same thing, or they're, you know, always with this one partner. Obviously, if you're in a marriage or in an exclusive relationship, it's like the same thing all the time, and it kind of becomes old, especially now when I feel like we are kind of more ADD like and more
absolutely
dopamine
without
deficient. What are you doing without in these circumstances when people kind of get, you know, sick of the old same old thing all the time?
Okay, I mean, it is absolutely true that sex with a familiar, committed, long-term partner is not as exciting as it is with a new partner. That's just the way it goes. However, you still can have good sex. And what I would say by good sex, I mean sex that makes you feel really good about yourself. If you're feeling bored, it means you're doing it wrong, because it means you're not really, really tuned into the moment. Because in the moment, it's never the same. You know, like they never say, you never step in the same river twice. So in the moment, it's always different. And if you're in the experience, you're just experiencing the moments as they pass. A lot of couples end up having what I call bad sex because they're just trying to do what they need to do, usually to give their partner an orgasm so they can have an orgasm so they can go to sleep. And that kills a lot of relationships. I always say sex should be like a meal. You should enjoy the appetizers. And when you're at a really good restaurant, you've had this experience once or twice, I'm sure, you're enjoying the appetizers and you kind of forget that they're appetizers. And then your main course arrives and you go, wow, this is great. We got a main course too. You know, and for most couples, like intercourse is the main course. And then you're busy with your main course and all of a sudden the dessert tray arrives and you go, whoa, we get dessert too? I love this place. So that's how it should be with really good sex. You're just in the moment. You're in the moment with the appetizers. You're in the moment with the main course. And then you're in the moment with dessert, which is orgasm. So if you do that, it's never the same. Mm. However, most couple people in long-term relationships do find that there are peaks and valleys of sexual interest. And there are times when it's really, really good. And there are other times where it's nice. It's nice. Or as one woman in my practice says, hey, it's perfectly lovely. So it's nice. It's nice. So it's a little bit like being an artist. You know, you're a podcast host, which is a little bit like being an artist. You know that sometimes inspiration comes and sometimes inspiration finds you. But in order for inspiration finds you, you have to be kind of doing it. And it only finds you. Picasso said inspiration finds me when it finds me working. You know, I work and I wait for it to get there. So inspiration comes. It just doesn't come predictably because we're not machines. So sometimes you have really good sex and sometimes the sex is fine. It's good. It's all good. Don't worry.
Yeah.
One of the things that causes problems is that the couples experience a loss of desire and then they freak out. And freaking out is not erotic. So you just got to calm yourself down and go, it's okay. I'm not a machine. It's fine. It's fine. Let me just kind of chill and be in the moment. And obviously the other thing is porn, which is this huge thing. You know, in the year 2000, if a guy managed to have a fast enough modem so that he could get on the internet and download a still image of a naked woman, he was really, really excited. And a lot of guys would masturbate to those pictures. And then around 2005, things got a little faster. And all of a sudden there were videos and people said, wow, you know, breasts. I mean, they're bouncing around and jiggling and stuff. And this is amazing. And not to say anything like that. And now nobody ever could masturbate to a still image anymore because, you know, the ante kind of got upped. And then in 2019, you go on Pornhub and it's like stepbrother does it with stepsister or something like that. And it's just like a regular couple that aren't like related by blood having sex with each other is not exciting enough. You know, it's crazy. So anyhow, you know, it's a thing. Now, most people respond to porn, which I think is natural because it goes back again 100,000 years ago on the plains of Africa. People were roaming around in hunter-gatherer bands of 50 to 150 people. And when one or two of them decided to have sex, there was no bedroom door. You know, everybody else is watching. And so people are used to watching other people have sex and they like it. They find it exciting and it makes them want to have sex too. So we come from a kind of a promiscuous part of the ape family. You know, we're pair bonded, but we've got these kind of dual instincts kind of warring between us. So people like to watch porn. I think it's a natural thing. People like that. And every man likes the idea of collecting a harem. So if he, you know, kind of gets a couple of things that he knows turns him on and then he'll rotate between them, you know, during a single session with the internet. The problem that occurs is sex is like Pavlov's dog. You know, I remember from like college psychology, Pavlov, every time he fed his dog, he rang a bell. And the dog's nervous system learns to associate the bell and the food. So now you just ring the bell and the dog gets hungry. What you want is for the bell to be the scent and touch and sight of your partner. It's like Pavlov's dog. You associate it with sexual gratification. Unfortunately, most guys in relationships who do porn, they only do it when the wife's out of the house. So the wife leaves the house, and that's when the bell rings. And it goes, okay, time to turn on the sex. Or it's nighttime, and the wife falls asleep, and that's when the bell rings. The guy says, okay, now go in the bed. His hands touch the keyboard, and whoa, that's exciting. So she wakes up. The bell stops ringing. She comes back in the house. The bell stops ringing. You can see what that does in kind of a Pavlovian way to a couple's sexual bond together. It just completely messes it up. So what you want to do, I tell these guys in my office all the time, you could do porn, but make sure you have like more orgasms with your partner than you do with the porn, because that way you keep the bell ringing when you're with your partner.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So what do you recommend as far as how often guys should watch porn, and also how often couples should have sex? Like, is there some kind of base guideline for this? I know it's going to be different between couples, and every couple's different.
Yeah, it's very different. So there are exceptions to every rule. But, you know, if pressed, I would say that a couple in a relationship should make sure that they have sex at least once a week. Because less than once a week, it tends to be a slippery slope to not doing it all. Yeah. And there's something about once a week which tends to be a magic number. Now, more than once a week is fine. And I really like the idea, if a busy working couple has sex just on the weekend once a week or twice a week, that during the week they're simmering, as we said. You know, they're just kind of getting excited together sometime. Once in a while before leaving, instead of kissing each other goodbye, they simmer each other goodbye. Or before falling asleep at night, instead of kissing each other goodnight, they kind of simmer each other goodnight and go to bed excited. So that's a wonderful thing to do. And so they should be doing that a lot.
Yeah.
But I think I think once a week is really kind of a minimum. So even if you're not feeling inspired, it's worth taking the time to really tune up once a week. The other thing is, you know, Kinsey did a study of male, what he called TSO, total sexual outlet, which is the number of climaxes or ejaculations that a guy needs in a week. And most guys in the demographic of your listenership, young adult men or youngish adult men, need between two or three orgasms a week to be happy. Goes down a little bit by age 50 to maybe one a week to be happy. But most guys in your young demographic need about two or three orgasms a week to be happy. So if they get, you know, two of them from their partner and one from porn, there's nothing wrong with that. The interesting thing is that there is a whole cohort of guys who need, you know, one to three orgasms a day to be happy. It's a whole nother little peak on the curve way out there, you know, a total sexual outlet per week of like 7 to 21. And those guys are interesting. I see a lot of them in my practice. Many of them actually use masturbation for mood regulation. They use it when they're stressed. They use it when they're bored. It's just kind of an all-purpose. It's like an all-purpose tool in order to regulate their mood. And it's usually important for those guys to – you know, it's like they say in the ADHD literature, you know, yes, sex is not part of your treatment plan. You want to not have that be the only thing you use for mood regulation. Otherwise, you're going to get this Pavlov thing where you're doing it so much more to the phone or to your computer than to your partner that it can start to get in the way.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't even know these guys existed. And
lots. My office full up.
There must be some listeners right now who do that as well. And you know,
statistically, I would say yes.
And these nymphomaniacs out there, you crazy?
No, they're just using. Well, some guys are just very, very horny.
Yeah.
I talked to some guys. You know, there's a range for everything. I mean, there's some guys who don't have much sex drive at all, and other guys who are just like, you know, like Howard Stern. You know, they just get erect all day long. or Howard Stern back when he was a young guy. He may still be like that. I have no idea. Sorry, Howard. But a lot of guys who are doing it a lot are doing it for mood regulation. So it's good to have a better portfolio of stuff you do to regulate your mood.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, there's some people too that would say that you got to get off porn completely and quit it, and you know, it's doing all these things. It definitely changes your brain. They've done studies like that. It changes your brain in some type of way, and then dopamine receptors get changed. They get downside or downregulated. But like you said, if you balance it out so that you're actually having more real sex, I think it's not really a problem. I think your brain actually, like you said, we've grown from thousands of years ago watching people have sex. Like it's
exactly
a normal thing.
It's a normal thing.
But if you overdo it, you know, you can kind of go off the deep end with that as well. Like anything else, there's certainly a balance there. I do want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, which was basically like the having, you know, going to a restaurant and having the appetizer and then the meal and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What happens when you see people that come to a point where they don't even just like kind of get bored with stuff, but they just don't even like the sex anymore. They don't even like the final meal anymore. They just kind of have grown disinterested in having that food after, you know, X amount of years. At that point, do you recommend that they part ways?
Great question. It's hard to say because, you know, it's like in math. There's the numerator and the denominator. You know, the numerator is the top number in a fraction and the denominator is the bottom number in a fraction. There's that denominator of all those people out there. And then I only see the numerator, who are the people who actually come into my office, and it's a very small fraction. Yeah. So a lot of people who part ways don't come see me, obviously. But I think that it often is an indication that you're kind of done with the relationship if you no longer look forward to having sex with that person. So if you're in a committed relationship, you got a whole different situation, because that's one of the beauties of a committed relationship. You say, what's going on here? What, am I upset about something? Am I angry at this person? Do I feel I can't please them? Is that why I've withdrawn from them? We got to talk this through. But if you're not committed to that person, there's really nothing binding you to that person. And if the sex doesn't really feel good anymore and you're not really into that person anymore, then sometimes that could be a sign that you're just done.
And, you know, that's the thing too. It's like, it's not the end of the world if that thing does happen. Like that day comes where you guys just aren't interested, or one person isn't interested in the other. It's like, you know,
not all couples are meant to be forever.
Exactly. That's a great point, man. And we had Dr. Robert Glover. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh, I love his book, No More Mr. Nice Guy. It's a great book.
Great dude, great writer.
Oh, I'm so happy that your audience got to hear him.
No, he's awesome. And he said basically the same thing, where it's like, you know, I think he's been married 3 or 4 times.
Huh.
But he's like, you know, he's happy with all his marriages. He learned something. He had great experiences. And he just keeps moving on. And he just got married again a couple of years ago. And he's like happier than ever. It's you know, awesome.
Very interesting. Very interesting. The other myth that is everybody's always saying marriage is hard work, you know? I hate that idea.
Yeah.
You know, I think life is hard work, you know, because, you know, your machines break down and bills come due and things, prices rise and stuff. And, you know, you get heartburn and stuff. Marriage should be easy. You know, relationships should be easy. They should be fun. You should enjoy yourself. You should enjoy the other person. It's like raising kids. You know, there's a lot to do. But if you're not enjoying your kids, you're not doing it right. They need to be enjoyed. And your partner needs to be enjoyed too. So I don't like all this hard work business. One of the things I like about Robert Glover is he says a lot of guys worry too much about what their partner thinks of them. And a lot of guys these days worry too much about what their partner thinks of them. And it's just not – it's not manly.
Yeah. No, it's 100% accurate. And
they go, how am I doing? After sex, they want to talk and have a recap. How was it? Was it good? No, wait, what's it could be improved? And the woman says, get out of my head. You know, I hate this.
Yeah, absolutely. Neither
it was good. Now leave me alone.
Benefiting. The man and the woman, they're both suffering when a guy says
exactly.
something like that.
Exactly. It's too much, too needy. It's too much need for reassurance.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to wrap things up in a moment.
Okay.
But I do want to, I did want to ask you, you mentioned this in kind of the beginning of the episode, how your best advice for choosing a lifelong partner or a long-term partner? What is some of the criteria for that?
Okay. You want somebody with whom you feel like you can be yourself. When you're with that person, you say, hey, yeah, I'm me. I could be me with this person. I feel like this person likes me. I like them. I feel good around them. It's easy. It's easy. And it feels easy to be with them. And I like that because life goes on for a long time and there are a lot of difficulties. And I don't need a relationship that's difficult. I want it to be easy. A lot of people like Robert Glover, I haven't talked to him about this. You know, they've been, you know, divorced, remarried, and they go, the first one, it was with work all the time. This one, it's like easy. It's easy. You know, we just kind of we're just kind of like a nice match. So that's what you really want. And the final thing is you want to be with somebody who's reasonably happy, because somebody who's reasonably happy is usually going to be reasonably happy with you too. Somebody who's not happy is usually not going to be happy with you either. So I would say that's a really important tip.
Yeah, I like that, man. 100%.
Yeah, I lucked into it. I met somebody who had all those things, but I didn't even know what the rules were. I just happened to get lucky.
Yeah, 28 years, man. You're doing something right.
We're doing okay.
But Dr. Steve, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. I really do appreciate it.
It's a lot of fun, Justin. Thank you.
No, I appreciate it. Absolutely. And what is a final send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience, and then a place that our listeners can check out more about your work?
Okay. The final send-off is, for good sex, don't think so much about the body. Think about the mind. And what you really want to think about is this doing anything special for me? Am I losing a few IQ points? Am I getting kind of dumb and happy with this person? Because if you are, that means you're in the moment. And it's going to feel good for you, and it's probably going to feel good for them too. So that would be my final advice there. And anybody who wants to find me, I'm at sexualityresource.com. And my book is Love Worth Making, How to Have Ridiculously Great Sex in a Long-Lasting Relationship. And my podcast is Relationship Doctor on the QDT Network. That stands for the Quick and Dirty Tips Network. And dirty has nothing to do with sex. They had that long before they had me on. And look forward to hearing from anybody who is interested in contacting me, and really appreciate having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much, Dr. Steve. I really do appreciate it too, man. And I know our guys are really going to love this one. So take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care, Justin. Bye-bye.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.